we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
And the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, April 1st, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Elise Jacobson.
Hi.
And Caroline Carnery. Welcome, everyone. Today may be April Fool's Day, but our show today is no joke. We are presenting to you the Dairy Show. So if you're local, you may have heard about the upcoming dairy-free living half-day course, which is happening this Sunday here in Vancouver and being presented by the Low Impact Lab and Earth Safe Canada. It's a first-time educational and hands-on endeavor that I'm excited about, and we'll be speaking to the organizer, Bridget Gem, about this sold-out event and similar events that she has planned for the future. And for our feature interview, we'll actually have one of the speakers of the Dairy Free Living event on the show today. Her name is Elise Desaulniers, and she is very well versed in discussing the dirty underbelly of what the dairy industry is all about. She has written a book called Cash Cow, 10 Myths About the Dairy Industry, and she will be on the show today to tell us about some of these myths and also some of the realities when it comes to the messaging of the dairy industry that we have been fed all our lives. That interview is coming up in about 28 minutes, so please do stay tuned. Now, I would say that my all-time and long-time favorite vegetarian on TV is actually a cartoon character, and that's Lisa Simpson. What do you have to say about that, Caroline?
Oh, well, I'm really, really excited today because there's a new petition that's taking off, and the petition is to take Lisa Simpson, who became a vegetarian on TV in 1995 in front of 14.6 million viewers, to take her from being a vegetarian to move her into being a vegan. Now, this petition is drafted and it's going to the producers and the writers of The Simpsons with the idea that it's time for Lisa to evolve her character. Lisa, as we all know, is the character who cares about animals, who cares about the environment, who cares about health, who just cares about stuff. And so it makes sense in terms of her story arc to evolve her character into this vegan.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Lisa Simpson is honestly my favorite cartoon character of all time, possibly my favorite TV character of all time. I think she's absolutely awesome. We were talking earlier about how we all feel like we identify with her, just being an activist and caring so much about everyone and everything and wanting the world to be a better place, wanting to make the world a better place. And I absolutely agree. I think it makes a lot of sense for her to go vegan, and it would be definitely a conversation starter, and a lot of people would see it.
Yes. Now, on that episode where Lisa goes vegan, Paul and Linda McCarthy come on that show. That was so
vegetarian.
Long ago. Vegetarian, sorry. Wishful thinking there.
Yeah.
They come on the show, and I was just reading this morning that they made it a requirement of appearance that Lisa would not just go vegetarian on that show, but she would never revert during her time on the show to being a practicing omnivore again. So she had to stay at least vegetarian. So I think that, you know, we need to also start lobbying Paul McCartney right now to actually say, okay, Paul, it's time for you to go vegan.
Apparently he is vegan now. Well, I read that recently. Who knows what you read in the media, but I did read that he said he went vegan like a couple years ago something like that.
Well, yeah. All the better, because now it's time to get him to actually spearhead the charge to come back on the Simpsons and talk about the transition.
Part deux.
Exactly. Yeah. It's time.
For sure.
Yeah, I've also always said too, like, Lisa has always resonated really with me. I've always identified with her. And it wasn't, I guess she became vegetarian in 1995, right? Which was about,
right.
It was a year after I had. I remember seeing that episode. And that definitely struck a chord with me. Like it just all made sense. But Lisa is always just real. I like The Simpsons. I'm a Simpsons fan. And I used to watch it all the time. But every time I watch it now, even still, is she stands for the things that I think are needed in the world. She is that pillar of social justice. She's that pillar of fairness, compassion, mercy. And with all those qualities comes vegetarianism or veganism, right? As we know it these days. So I just really hope that, you know, that's the direction that is going to be taken with her. It just makes sense. But I think maybe just the writers, The Simpsons, maybe haven't thought about it. So there's, did you talk about the petition?
We have to get the vote out on this. Yeah, now, this is petition. on our Facebook Animal Voices page.
Yeah.
So go there, find the petition, sign the petition, share it. They're looking for 100,000 signatures. It just started. I looked at it this morning. It had 5,000 signatures. So we have a long way to go. But if there's one petition you sign, you know, today, make it this one.
I signed it yesterday. So yay. I think it actually only came out a couple days ago when I saw it on your
Facebook. It's hot off the presses.
And,
it is.
And you said it has over 5,000 now.
This morning. Like, so that's double when you signed it, which is just 2 days ago.
It had 2,200 when I signed it. So it's growing. So yeah, that's it's fantastic. I think we'll reach that goal. And one of these days, Caroline's going to do a segment on the power of petitions. I've already named it.
Crazy.
She's the queen of petitions here. But as so if Caroline says this is one that you want to sign, and you know, it may seem kind of frivolous and silly, but you know, the social impact of television and media, as we know, and as we talk about the show, as we'll talk about today, media messaging, it's really powerful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it influences people in a big way, for sure. And it's you know, it can kind of help to mainstream certain concepts that might not have been mainstream already. I mean, when you think about it, there, I really can't think of any vegan characters in kind of mainstream media who are not played as just the butt of a joke. You know, often if you see a minor character come on who's vegan, it's kind of this big silly thing. You know, they're kind of again, they're just sort of a joke. But it would be incredible, I think, to have a character with as much who's as loved as Lisa Simpson and, you know, with as much influence being vegan.
I think she's just the person in quotes to bring this forward.
She is a person.
Yeah,
she is now.
Don't say my Lisa's not a person. She's a role model. And
absolutely.
She's been a role model for me for many years as a young brand, as you could say, like brand new vegetarian. When she went vegetarian, that absolutely influenced me positively. It was a good episode too, just sort of how they kind of funny, like in a funny, kind of weird, sarcastic way showed how animals get killed, but kind of, I hope, planted seeds for people to realize that that is how your food, like literally they showed like a cow going into the slaughterhouse on a conveyor belt and coming out on the other side of the conveyor belt as ground beef, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it does happen.
Yeah, and I think at school they were, Lisa was called out twice for being an independent thinker, which was a very bad thing, and she was labeled.
I love it.
And a button was pushed. And so, you know, and they were forced to watch a video from the Meat Council. And it was a propaganda film showing, you know.
And that's what goes on these
meat
days.
Meat and You, Partners in Patriotism was the name of the film.
Well, thanks so much for that. Go on to our Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, and sign the petition to ask Lisa Simpson to go vegan.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food, sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food, hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Hello, darlings. Sean Treviel here for Fruit Salad. Join us every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. for community news and events, live performances and music, fantastic guests, and just general fabulousness that you'd find in a fruit salad. Support your community radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. There's nothing else like this in Vancouver or in the world. Listen in.
And now for some upcoming events. Saturday, April 2nd, that's tomorrow, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., it's International Bear Day 2016 at Capilano University in North Vancouver. Join Raincoast Conservation Foundation, Capilano University, and the North Shore Black Bear Society for International Bear Day 2016. The event includes a free family afternoon with crafts, face painting, storytelling, music by Grizzly Waves, displays, interactive presentations, workshops, and a nature walk. The evening program will include a screening of the film Great Bear and presentations about research and conservation in the land of the spirit bear. Again, that's tomorrow, April 2nd, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. Then on Thursday, April 14th, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's a benefit punk rock show and vegan bake sale for No New Animal Lab at the Black Lab, Vancouver. The organizers say animal experimentation and vivisection are cruel and inaccurate science, but the University of Washington in Seattle is only interested in making money. UW wants to build a $17 million underground vivisection lab, and the grassroots No New Animal Lab campaign is the only thing that can stop them from building this torture facility. No New Animal Lab have been working very hard and incurring legal fees in doing so, and need our help to continue this important campaign. Featured bands will include Total Isolation, Might As Well, Want, and Black Pills. They're asking a $10 minimum donation. The Black Lab Vancouver is an underground venue, so you have to email for the address, theblacklabvancouver@gmail.com. Again, that's Thursday, April 14th, 7 to 10 p.m.
Animal Advocacy Camp is returning to Vancouver.
Yay!
May 21st and May 22nd. I'm so going to this for the first time. The group aims to strengthen the animal advocacy movement by building empowered and passionate communities of animal advocates to end injustices perpetuated against other animals. The speakers list is outstanding, featuring top animal rights advocates from near and far. And you can buy tickets at www.eventbrite.ca. And early bird tickets are on sale until April 15th.
And they're only $20 a day right now for, this is a full conference, a full weekend conference. So I advise people to go to this conference if you're local in Vancouver, or even if you live south of the border or on Vancouver Island or anywhere that's sort of reachable. This is where all the animal advocates of Vancouver are going to be to partake and network and learn.
Awesome. If you have an animal-related event you'd like us to broadcast on the show, please email it to us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. Vancouver Co-op Radio is testing our transmitter facility from March the 15th to April the 4th. If you are experiencing interference in our broadcast, please call 604-684-8494 extension 226 to report. That's 604-684 extension 226.
For our first interview today, we have Brigitte Gemme on the show. She is the organizer of a first-time course happening in Vancouver this weekend called Dairy Free Living. It's being hosted by a social venture called the Low Impact Lab, as well as Earth Save Canada. Brigitte is here today to tell us all about it.
Hello, Brigitte, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Thank you for having me.
So please tell us about the Dairy Free Living course. This is the first time that such a workshop is taking place in Vancouver, and I'm curious to know what the impetus is behind it. Also, what is the purpose of it, and who is it intended for?
The true and candid real reason why this is happening is that Elise Desaunier, who is the first speaker for the event, sent me a copy of her book. She's been a contact, a Facebook friend kind of thing for many, many years. And she sent me a copy of her newly translated book last fall, And I thought I should do something to thank her for sending me the book. And that was how this event came about, because I thought she really should be better known in Vancouver, because now that her work is translated in English, it was a great opportunity. And it really has morphed into something much bigger, and I'm really excited that we're going to be able to share it with a broader audience than I initially intended. The course's purpose is to provide its participants with primarily three things: information about why we should let go of dairy, the confidence that they can meet their nutritional needs without consuming dairy, and a lot of enthusiasm about all the delicious alternatives out there, and also, of course, the things they can cook at home that do not include dairy. So the event is primarily meant for those of us who are still consuming dairy products, but who have concerns for their health, their environmental footprint, or for animal suffering, or all three. Those who are intolerant to lactose or allergic to milk protein, of course, are particularly welcome, because they have something not really cool happening to them, but at the same time, I think a real opportunity to embrace a much healthier lifestyle that's also better for the planet, right? And obviously, many of the people who are coming to the event are already vegans, or for whatever reason, they don't consume dairy. The event is a great opportunity for them to have a bit of a refresher on the nutritional issues, thanks to the contribution of a registered dietitian. And we're also finding that many vegans are coming, and they're bringing along either a vegetarian or an open-minded omnivore along with them, so they can help nudge them a little bit into the right direction.
Wow, that just sounds fantastic. Now, you'll be having two key speakers at the course, as you mentioned, Elise Desaulniers, and then also registered dietitian Vicente Molina, who we know here on the show. We've had her on before. Can you tell us a bit about what they'll be speaking about?
Absolutely. So Elise has just had her book, Cash Cow, 10 Myths About the Dairy Industry, translated into English. By the way, it's published at Lantern Books. Lantern is a really good publishing house for all sorts of other vegan material. In the book, Elise discusses how milk has become to be perceived as natural, as healthy, and even as necessary for good health, right? Notably for children. And she talks about the whole context in which this has happened and how it's been supported by advertising and the government support to the dairy industry. She also talks about other myths, including the idea that if cows were unhappy, well, they wouldn't produce milk, right? Or another myth that's around is that I could never live without cheese. I'm sure you have heard that many times. And so Elise will really be addressing those myths, obviously in a smaller way, less extended way than in the book, but she will be talking about that more global political economic perspective on the dairy industry. Vicento, on the other hand, she has been a dietitian for 50 years. She's full of beans. She's so energetic. She's been vegan for 23 years now, and she has a lot of specific knowledge on dairy-free living. She does her consulting work, obviously, with mostly vegans, and she will be sure to address how we can still fulfill our nutritional needs, in particular for calcium and vitamin D, when we don't consume dairy. Now, she will also be talking about preventing osteoporosis, which is a concern for women in particular. And we have had lots of demand for addressing specifically how to feed kids without dairy, since, as I was just mentioning, the myth of the necessity of dairy for kids is so prevalent. And so Vicento will be addressing the feeding, the proper care and feeding of dairy-free children in a little bit more detail.
So now part of the course is going to entail having the course attendees try out over 30 dairy-free food products, which I think is amazing, and I'd like to know more about this. So what types of different products can people attending expect to be taste testing?
This has, I don't want to say it's gone out of hand, but almost. You know, the initial idea was just that after the conference, we would be handing out some ice cream bars, like coconut ice cream bars, for example, and people would be walking into the April sunshine, eating their ice cream bar made from coconut and thinking, geez, why would I ever eat the dairy stuff again? Because this is so good, right? And the more I started talking with the community, there was obviously a lot of interest in sharing products far above and beyond those ice cream bars. And so what we're going to do at the event is that we have three different tastings. We have a milk tasting, we have a cheese tasting in the middle, and then we have a dessert tasting in the middle. And in every tasting, there is a balance between the brands that are available at every supermarket in the province. For example, Daya has been a great supporter of our event, but also Field Roast, Earth Island, Coconut Bliss, I was mentioning for ice cream. We also will have a variety of milks that are available at, you know, most grocery stores in the province. And the other side will be more local food makers with gourmet products that are smaller production. But of course, people in Vancouver love their local producers of food. And so we will make sure that they are also featured. So we have a couple of milk makers, Nuez Milk and Commodity Juicery are showcasing some milks. We have three cheese makers, including Karen McCaddy. She was the executive chef of Graves previously, and now she's executive chef of Zend Lounge. She's very well known in Vancouver, and people have been waiting to see what she's going to do with her cheese production, and she's going to be showcasing great products there. And amongst the dessert people, we have Edible Flowers as a local, but also Nice Vice Creamery. They recently opened their retail location in Yaletown. Many people heard about them. Not everybody made it to the shop. And so if they come to the event, they're going to get to taste a lot of the Nice Vice, delicious, not-so-vice ice cream. Yes.
Wow, I think that's just so fantastic, and I think people will really be looking forward to that, because even when I meet people who have even just gone vegan recently, they don't know about all of these products. Like, they're completely ignorant, so this is just a really great
Absolutely.
Way to let them know. So I'm curious, because I have my favorites, but what are some of your favorite dairy-free food items that will may be at the course?
I have a sweet spot for those ice cream bars. The bars themselves will not be at the spot, but we will have a lot of theirs. I think all the cheeses are just fabulous. I've let go of cheese entirely in my diet, the dairy cheese, about a year ago now. I've reduced my consumption for a while, and I don't miss it at all. But I find those products so much more innovative than the convert, you know, the traditional cheeses. So I really like them. But I'm a sweet tooth myself, so I'm quite excited about having some cupcakes also from Edible Flower. But I have to say, you know, the a thing that's really frustrating, I think, for people is that those products aren't cheap, right? I mean, they're not more expensive than dairy alternatives, but, you know, if you buy something you don't know, it costs you $10 and you don't like it, it feels like waste, and it makes you not so inclined to go out and try another one later. And that was really part, a large part of the reason for me to create this tasting, is really to give people a chance to taste as many things as their heart will allow them, and really give them a good feeling of what they like. We will have coffee, so people can try different kinds of milk in their coffee as well, to see what works. So that's a really important component. But really, it's about learning by experience. Having information is one thing. We all know all the important things we need to save the planet and, you know, our health and be nice and so forth. But sometimes putting it in practice is hard. And so just being there and living it for themselves for perhaps the first time in some cases, or the first time in an extended manner for many people, I'm really hoping will give them a feeling for what it would be to live dairy-free on a permanent basis. And once they have the information, which definitely they will have after the event, I don't see why they wouldn't keep it going.
Yeah, and I really like the format of this course, because it is actually like a workshop that people are going to be getting the information and then start putting it into practice, as you said, by trying out all the delicious dairy-free foods and seeing what they might like to incorporate into their lives. So this course...
Absolutely.
This course happens in 2 days, and it's actually sold out right now, which is fantastic. It's just generated that much interest. I'm wondering, will there be future dairy-free living courses that our listeners can attend? And if so, how can they sign up for this?
I'm definitely hoping to have a sequel to this. There are some voices in the interior and a little bit further out in the greater Vancouver area asking for this event to be repeated in the suburbs. That is absolutely a possibility. I'm also hoping to have another kind of more hands-on, probably much smaller size events where people can cook their own food without dairy and experiment in a safe environment with hopefully some very qualified local chefs and cookbook authors. So we're working on that as well. So the best thing to do right now is to go on the website dairyfreeliving.ca, in one word, there is a link there to register to our newsletter, and information will be forthcoming as we plan more events.
And is there anything else that you'd like to add about this weekend's course?
I think really, as the momentum is building for the event, and I was so thrilled that it was sold out 10 days ahead. On the flip side, it's too bad for the people missing out. But I think there is really a need in the community, both on the part of the consumers and on the side of the food makers, to share information about how we can transition to a lifestyle without dairy and how we can maintain it in the long run, how we can keep it going. And it really requires that combination of information, feeling, and experience. We need to have all three together. And so we're really thinking hard right now and brainstorming how we can turn that dairy-free living website into a platform that we can use for a resource, but also to provide people with experiments that will give them a good chance of keeping it going in the future. And so stay tuned. I really hope that one person at a time, with one experiment at a time, we can just live on the better side of history a little bit, right? And just let go of dairy.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Bridget, to tell us about the Dairy Free Living Half Day course happening this Sunday, April 3rd in Vancouver, and also plans for future events. To find out more, please visit dairyfreeliving.ca. Thanks, Bridget, and good luck with your event this weekend.
Thank you, Allison.
And now we have some news for you.
Well, on Wednesday and Thursday of this week, the Vancouver Aquarium and Gary Charbonneau appeared in court. The aquarium is seeking an injunction to have the documentary called Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered removed from the internet. Now, they're alleging that Mr. Charbonneau and Evotion Films, Inc. used copyrighted material from the facility's website. Mr. Charbonneau responds saying that he hasn't violated copyright and said the material could be fairly used for the purposes of research and education. The aquarium comes back and claims that Mr. Charbonneau has used the film for commercial purposes and that if this is allowed to continue, that they will suffer irreparable harm. Now, it's interesting that the aquarium has not filed a claim for defamation, so they're actually not refuting any of the information that was revealed in the documentary. This is a copyright claim, infringement claim. And now all the arguments have been heard, and the judge is going to render her decision on Monday at approximately 1:30, and we'll be reporting on that decision on next week's show.
According to a new report released by the Towson University Department of Economics, quinoa's popularity as a superfood is not harmful to the Peruvian communities that harvest the grain. The study analyzed welfare impacts of rising quinoa costs in Peru over the course of 10 years to determine how the high cost of quinoa, a Peruvian staple, affected farmers, consumers, and households in the area. With the worldwide popularity of the quote-unquote superfood, demand for the grain has increased greatly in recent years, leading to questions about how the mass production negatively affects farmers and populations who live around the crop. Specifically, concerns have been raised about the higher cost of a food that a local population is dependent upon. However, while the quinoa boom hit from 2006 to 2013, during which the cost of the crop tripled, this extensive study found that, quote, quinoa production is associated with a faster rate of growth of household welfare, unquote. Specifically, every 10% increase in price brought a 0.7% increase in household quality of life. So, very interesting.
So, how does this affect people who identify as vegans and those who don't?
Well, I don't know that. I mean, you know, vegans are often have been scapegoated for that sort of thing.
Because we're eating all the quinoa?
Yeah, but I honestly, I was telling you before, I've been vegan for 5.5 years. I can probably count on one hand the times I've eaten quinoa in that time. I've never eaten quinoa. And I know a lot of meat eaters who eat it all the time. So, I mean, it's really, I don't think it's specifically a vegan issue. I found it interesting because, yeah, again, vegans are often scapegoated for problems with quinoa or other plant crops.
Now, if a job is so incredibly distasteful that no one wants it, what do you do? In Canada, sadly, the answer might be to offer those terrible jobs to incoming Syrian refugees. And such is the situation faced by Canadian slaughterhouses. According to the Canadian Meat Council, the nation is short about 1,000 5,000 meatpacking plant workers. And the jobs the plants can't fill are, of course, the worst ones. The Canadian meat industry employs 64,500 people nationwide in this work. And despite what they say is good benefits and steady work, there's been an, quote, industry-threatening scarcity of Canadian butchers, meat cutters, laborers who are willing to accept these jobs. Now, slaughterhouse workers apparently suffer from, or at least experience a certain kind of post-traumatic stress disorder called perpetration-induced traumatic stress, or PITS, PITS. Now, this results from situations in which the sufferer was a causal participant in the traumatic event. Symptoms include depression, disassociation, paranoia, anxiety, panic, drug and alcohol abuse, and dreams of violence. Now, for the last 10 years or more, Canada has authorized skilled immigrants to work in slaughterhouses under its temporary foreign worker program. And the Canadian Meat Council now proposes that because of the chronic shortage in this industry, Canada should adjust its rule to permit incoming Syrian refugees to take these jobs under the country's new express entry program.
That's unbelievable.
I think it's terrible. I mean, yeah. I think it's bad enough that there's obviously a need for these, in quotes, for these jobs because our society demands that animals be killed for their gustatory pleasure. But now we're putting the most vulnerable people into these positions. Not that I think any people should be put into these positions, but I think that's really sad and not a very nice way to welcome these refugees who were shown on the media as being, you know, welcomed by our prime minister. And now he's saying, you know, welcome to Canada. Now go work in the slaughterhouse.
Take the worst jobs that we
take
have.
The worst job ever.
These are people who are already suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and they've come to a new country. They're not speaking the language, and they are they're fairly unemployable because of these things. And then, you know, so of course it is their choice to say no to this work. They can refuse it.
But they need to repay their loans that they've been given to. Mm-hmm. So I would think it's a
pressure.
And
they have families that they need to close.
They're in a tight spot and
feed. And this is truly where the intersection in between abuse meets abuse, I think.
Thank you for the news. You have been listening to Animal Voices here on Co-op Radio in Vancouver, 100.5 FM. Vancouver Co-op Radio is testing our transmitter facility from March 15th to April the 4th. If you are experiencing interference in our broadcast, please call 604-684-8494 extension 226 to report. That 604-684-8494 extension 226.
For our feature interview today for our dairy show, we have Elise Desaulniers. A popular and respected blogger in Quebec, Elise is a food ethics and animal rights advocate who is also interested in public policy, philosophy, and feminism. She has written a book called Cash Cow, 10 Myths About the Dairy Industry, which has just been translated into English. And in it, she takes a hard look at the dairy industry and how it has persuaded the general public to believe that cow's milk is a natural and valued part of the human diet. She is here today to tell us about some of these myths and some of the realities of the dairy industry. Bonjour, Elise, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak about the myths and realities of the dairy industry. As you write about in your book, Cash Cow, we in our Canadian and North American society have been raised to believe that drinking cow's milk is normal, natural, and necessary. But this couldn't be further from the truth, could it? In your book, you point out that before humans domesticated animals, there was not one drop of milk in our diet. So how did it come to be that we humans started to consume milk from another species?
That's a very good question. I've grown up thinking that milk has been there forever. But if you look at the history of agriculture, first you needed to domesticate animals in order to get their milk, because you cannot get the milk from a wild animal. So animal agriculture appeared only 10,000 years ago, and that's like really short in the human history. And before that, there was no way we could consume milk. So 10,000 years ago, we started domesticating animals and started milking a few animals. So it's really, really recent in the human history. And milking animals only happens in some parts of the world. So again, it's not everybody that has ancestors that consume animals' milk.
Well, I want to talk about lactase and the human yes. digestive system. You posed the question in your book, isn't it a little strange that a weaned adult human being should have to drink the milk of another mammal to have strong bones and be healthy? But you go into this further, and whenever the opportunity comes up, I like to tell our listeners about how we are actually mutated beings. Please tell
Absolutely.
Us about that.
Yes. Well, we see lactose intolerance as a disease, but it's a normal state. It's kind of a white privilege to consider that everybody has to be lactose tolerant. If you look at other mammals, after weaning, they can't digest milk anymore because the enzyme that allows you to digest milk stops working. And it's the same for all animals. It was the same for humans. For those of us who have ancestors that did consume milk a few thousand years ago, we had this genetic mutation that allows us now to digest milk. But it's only 25% of the human population today that have what we call the lactase persistence, which means 75% of the human population still cannot digest milk. So it's not a disease to be unable to digest milk. It's really, really normal. And of course, if you are lactose intolerant, you won't die by consuming dairy products. Some dairy products would be easier to digest than others, cheese and yogurt, for instance. But we really see it as a disease as well. It's just a normal state.
Well, I want to talk about messaging in the media, particularly for us here in Canada. As any of us in Canada know, the messaging by the dairy industry in the media towards Canadian citizens is quite prevalent. Can you give us some facts about this and comment on its impact on society, on our relationship with cow's milk?
First, the dairy industry is a huge industry. It's as big as the movie and media industry. So it's a really, really, really big. And when we talk about a big industry, we also talk about a huge marketing budget. In Canada, it's about $1 billion marketing budget. So when you have a budget that big, you have a huge influence on perception and you are everywhere. So, by putting money, marketing money on the market for years, and it started a bit after World War I, you change perception. The industry made it a reality that it's normal, natural, and necessary to consume dairy products. Dairy products are really everywhere in Canada, and a lot of that is marketing effort. For instance, when you go in fast food chains and there is meals including cheese, a lot of times there has been marketing agreements behind to include cheese and like pizzas or hamburgers and stuff like that. There's also huge teams of nutritionists hired by the dairy industry just to produce research and content telling us that milk is really good for you and that you need milk for your health.
Can you talk a bit about the impact on children as milk is really pushed in school? Specifically, I think when you and I were younger, I don't know so much about these days, but it seems from your book that that is still prevalent in our country here.
Oh, yes. Well, since the 1940s, we have decided in Canada that child needed to consume milk at school. So when we were young, distribution was everywhere in Canada, I believe. Now it's more in some, they focus a few schools, not all the school, but still it's part of the program to have kids consuming dairy since daycare. It's like an insurance policy for kids. So the idea that kids need to consume dairy and at least like 2 or 3 glasses of dairy a day is widespread, and all nutritionists and all school teachers you will meet, you will tell you that kids will need to consume dairy products. And the, I've met some mothers that have challenged that, that went to the daycare and told the daycare organization that, well, no, my kid won't consume dairy. We're vegan, or he or she's lactose intolerant. And it's always, always challenging to change that habit. So milk is absolutely everywhere. And in many schools in Canada, it's still distributed freely.
Yeah, and you also talk about just in our media messaging growing up and being in school, having milk fed to us, that we learn that it's normal to consume cow's milk and that this belief protects us from experiencing a negative emotion. What do you mean by that?
When you've spent your life with a belief, it's really hard to challenge it. It's the same for any belief if you when we think about religion or anything else. So even when we see, like, for instance, you're in British Columbia, so you've seen the videos from Chilliwack Farm where cows were beaten, it's really hard to question the fact that you need milk when it has been in your life forever. So the big idea behind Cash Cow was exactly that, to challenge the idea that milk is necessary. And if milk is not necessary, and if you can be perfectly happy and healthy without milk, then we can challenge the idea, why do we have to exploit dairy cows?
Yeah, and we'll be talking about that later in the interview. So we all know that the dairy industry touts cow's milk as being an essential source of calcium, which, as we've discussed, it can't be true since we're not even made to consume cow's milk. So how can it be essential that we receive calcium from this source? But what I want to talk about is what's in the milk that the dairy industry doesn't tell us about, such as hormones and allergens. Can you tell us about this, Elise?
Oh, yes. That was my biggest discovery writing Cash Cow, hormones. So when you start reading about dairy industry, you see some data from the States. And in the States, they give growth hormones to the cows. And Canadian dairy industry tell us that they are not using those growth hormones. So we believe that there is no hormones in Canadian milk, which is absolutely false. It's wrong. So first, in order to produce milk, a cow needs to be pregnant and then give birth to a baby. And it's always like, it's like every mammal, you and I do not produce milk because we are not milking a baby. The cows that do produce the milk we're consuming in Canada are pregnant. They do that because we want the cow to produce a stable amount of milk. So each year the cow becomes pregnant, she gives birth to a baby, and then she becomes pregnant again. So there is two kinds of hormone in the milk. First, the pregnancy hormones, and then the growth hormones that is there to have the baby growing up. Those two hormones are natural, but they are there in the milk. So pregnancy hormones and growth hormones. And we're not sure what the effect of those hormones are on the human body, but we do know that we absorb them, and they might be linked to many diseases. For instance, several cancers that we see a higher rate to the, among the people that consume dairy rather than people that do not consume dairy. Other diseases such as acne and stuff like that might be linked to hormones. When you're a teenager and your hormone balance is already tricky, adding dairy to your diet might make things even worse. We've also realized that there is more twins among the women that consume dairy than among the men, the women that do not consume dairy. And if you have a cancer, your doctor might tell you to stop consuming dairy because the growth hormone in the milk might help the cancer cells to grow.
Yeah. And can you talk about allergens? Because I think this is something that people, especially parents, don't even know about.
Yes. Some people say they are allergic to milk when they are lactose intolerant, but there is also allergy to dairy products, like there is allergy to other things. And those allergies are not the kind of allergies that you will like need an EpiPen and need to go to the hospital, but you will develop some reactions such as a type 1 diabetes, ear infection. I had like ear infection all my life when I was young, and that was probably probably linked to the fact that I was drinking about almost 1 liter of milk a day. Iron deficiencies, also colics. Many, many babies cry all the time. I have colics. And when their mother stopped drinking milk, the colic go away. Yes, we do have allergic reaction to dairy milk, and many people continue to consume it.
So let's consider the cows in the dairy industry. What facts should our listeners know about what happens to them in reality, as opposed to the idyllic images that we may see portrayed through the dairy industry's messaging?
I would say it's exactly the opposite of what you see on the milk cartons. In Canada, most of the cows stay indoor. In Quebec, it's the worst province in Canada. 87% are attached all their life. As I said earlier, their life is just a cycle of pregnancies and giving birth to a baby and another pregnancy and another baby, and they are separated from their calf when a few days after the birth of the calf, and that causes a huge emotional distress both to the calf and to the cow. And it's something we ignore, all the emotional distress cows have. Cows are also very social, very intelligent animals. And in the industry, they have no way to express that. They suffer from mammitis. They suffer from many diseases. In fact, they produce 2 or 3 times more milk than they are meant, I would say, to produce. So they are like race cars, and producing that huge quantity of milk just like tires them, and they after 4 or 5 years, when they can live about 25 years naturally, after 4 or 5 years they're just like too tired to survive, and they are sent to the slaughterhouse and become hamburger meat. So I think like among all farm animals, cows do have the worst life. It's really, really sad.
Wow. It's hard to say which animals have the worst life or not, and because they're all treated really badly, but you certainly make a case for cows. And
It's so long. Yeah. It's like that suffering lasts for 4 or 5 years. That's terrible.
They live the longest. That's a good case. Yes. For why they you're right. They technically do suffer the longest, because most farmed animals are killed when they're babies. You're right about that.
Yes.
So we've talked today about how we've been made to believe that there is a need for humans to drink cow's milk for health and even for cultural acceptance, as you described in your book. So how do we wean ourselves off false beliefs? And with regards to milk, what are the challenges in our society towards doing so?
It's a challenge. What we're doing now, the conversation we're having now, I hope will help people to realize that there is another story than the story that is being told by the dairy industry. If you look at the facts, look, for instance, at what independent researchers write. For instance, the Harvard Food Guide, that is independent, do not recommend to consume dairy. In fact, they recommend us to limit our dairy consumption. When you look at independent sources, you see that it's not the story that is being told by the dairy industry or the story we see in the Canadian Food Guide that is highly influenced by the industry. And you will discover that there is tons of alternative art out there to dairy products, like soy milk, for instance. I love soy milk. Has the same nutritional benefit as the cow milk, but less all the allergens and all the hormones and all of that. Products are there, and the other story is there for us to learn and to discover.
And now for a short announcement. Vancouver Co-op Radio is testing our transmitter facility from March 15th to April 4th. If you are experiencing interference in our broadcast, please call 604-684-8494, extension 226 to report. That's 604-684-8494, extension 226. And now back to our interview. You talk about in your book that our perceptions are structured by what psychologists called schema and mental categories, and you talk about the relationship between those categories and milk. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
It's a complicated concept, but the idea is that when you have a belief, it's impossible to challenge it. It's part of yourself. It's part of your identity. And anything that goes against it kind of just reinforces it. In the beginning of the book, I tell the story of a group of people that did believe that the end of the world was coming. And of course, the end of the world didn't come. And they explained that fact that they prayed so much that God or whatever decided to save them. And I think we have kind of this relationship with milk when we believe so much that milk is doing good for us, and we hear facts that go against that belief, that it might just reinforce the fact that we like milk and enjoy milk, and we will just think that, well, those people are paid, and I've heard that by the soy lobby or whatever. It's we're really, really good in finding way to justify our beliefs and not challenging them.
Well, I want to talk about the connections between feminism and the dairy industry for those who haven't made those connections yet. So if you were to have a conversation with someone who identifies as a feminist but who still consumes dairy, what would you say to him or her to help them make the connection between their dairy consumption and the ideology of feminism?
That's an interesting question. I became a feminist while writing this book, Cash Cow. So I became a feminist really late in my life. And I remember exactly what was the sentence I was writing. I wrote something like, cows are exploited because they are cows. And writing that, I realized, well, it's just like women that are exploited by porn industry and sex industry just because they are women. One of the first person to make that link was an American author called Carol G. Adams, but who wrote The Sexual Politics of Meat in early 90s. In the 19th century, the suffragists, those women in Britain and Canada that were fighting for the right to vote, were also anti-vivisection activists. They were fighting to end experimentation towards animals because they did recognize their own experience as women in the experience animals were suffering. So if you look at the history of feminism and the history of the animal rights movement, they are really, really, really close together. And there has been amazing women writing about those two topics for more than 100 years. If we come back to the cows, first, cows are women, and we force them to become pregnant. Many authors qualified that as a rape. They are not making love with another animal they fall in love with. They are really rape to become pregnant. And then they give birth to a calf, and they are attached to their babies like all mammals, and they are separated from their calves. So that is a big, big, big problem. And when we consume milk or the meat coming from the dairy cow, we forget the animal and the life of the animal, what that was behind that. Carol G. Adams calls that the absent referent. We forget the life of this animal. And it's the same when we exploit women. If you look at pornography, we forget about the life of the women behind those images. So it's really linked together, tied together, and it's the same story. In fact, what permits the exploitation of animals also permits the exploitation of women. And many others think that we must fight those two forms of exploitation together.
Oh, great answer. Thanks. So Earth Day is coming up soon on April 22nd. And so I think this is a great opportunity to speak about the environmental footprint of the dairy industry. What would you like to let our listeners know about when it comes to environmental impacts of dairy on our Earth?
Two things. A lot of people are reducing their meat consumption for environmental reason. We know that 18% of greenhouse gas are caused by animal agriculture, but we we kind of forget that producing milk and cheese are part of the equation. Replacing your meat by cheese is really like changing $1 for 4 quarters. It's exactly the same thing when you look at the greenhouse gas emitted by for producing cheese. 1 kilo of cheese compares to 1 kilo of pork. It's even worse than chicken. So replacing your meat by cheese is really, really not a good idea on an environmental standpoint. And you're still producing meat because those cows, those dairy cows, will become hamburger meat. Another big challenge we've been talking a lot recently is water consumption. There is drought in California, and we talk about almond milk and all of that. What we forget is to produce 1 liter of cow's milk, we need 1,000 liters of water. That's a lot. And if you compare with almond milk is only 300 liters of water. Remember, I was in San Francisco 2 years ago, and there was no glasses of water in coffee shops. You had to ask for them, and they were saying, like, yeah, we're saving water. Just ask for water if you want it. But, yes, it's a good thing. But a better thing would have been to replace the cow's milk by soy milk in the lattes to reduce the water footprint.
Well, you'll be speaking at the Dairy Free Living course here in Vancouver this weekend, but you have a new book coming out this month as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I'm so excited. It's in French for now. I hope it's going to be translated too. It's called the 21-Day Vegan Challenge. I've been speaking about veganism and food ethics for, 5, 6, 7 years. And a lot of people agree with me that we need at least to reduce our milk and dairy and consumption. But the how is challenging. Where do you start? What do you do? How do you deal with your kids' daycare? How do you deal with your family? How do you deal with your husband that is really a carnivore and wants meat? So I wrote this book really based on tips on how to at least try a vegan lifestyle. So everything's in there. There is recipes, there is nutrition facts, there is tips when you go to a restaurant, tips when you are in your family, and question and answer to the question people will ask you. You know, all vegans get the same question: what will happen if we stop eating milk and meat, and where will those animals go, and all of that. So I try to answer to all those questions, and I think the formula of the 21-day challenge has been done by many organizations around the world, and we've been doing that in Quebec for 2 years. And it works really well because you're not saying that you're going to be vegan forever. You're just saying that you try it. And I see it like learning a new language. And after your immersion in Spanish, you will see that it's much easier to speak Spanish or French. And it's the same with veganism. I hope people will just try the vegan lifestyle for a few weeks and see how easy it is. And after that, they will at least keep some part of their life vegan, or all of it, hopefully.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Elise, to speak about some of the myths and realities of the dairy industry. To find out more, please check out Elise's book, Cash Cow, and you can also find her at en.edistolnier.com or find the link to her website on our site at animalvoices.org. Thanks, Elise, and I hope you enjoy your time in Vancouver this weekend.
I really look forward for it.
You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us next Friday, April 8th. We'll be bringing you updates on the recent lawsuit the Vancouver Aquarium has brought against the creators of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. Now we'll leave you with a song. Here's a song that I co-wrote for my band, The Living, called Requiem for Bessie, and you'll hear me playing violin on it as well. We won't have time to play the entire song right now, but please check out the podcast of the show at animalvoices.org later on this weekend to hear it in its entirety. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Bessie sees the light, the ground, her mama cleans her up, relieved they snuggle, unaware of what's to come. Bessie's wrenched away by frigid hands impervious to mama's bellowing distress. For best, but cold tents sell the milk to strangers, feeding Bessie powdered blood instead. When Bessie's body's ready, fists and swabs will violate her as she screams and shakes her metal socks in us. be disposed of. Long ride in the bitter cold, thrust in a rain, bright lights, blinder, inspected by the crown, 20 cents a pound. She's a glass. She's a glass.